Today on Family Talk. Hello, and welcome back for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Jim Valdheis, and on today's classic broadcast, we're continuing our conversation with Bill and Pam Farrell about intimacy in marriage. Bill and Pam share pretty openly about their experiences, so if you have little ones around, you might want to save this broadcast for another time. This topic may sometimes be difficult to discuss, but it's essential for a strong marriage. In fact, on the last broadcast, the Farrells reminded us that marital intimacy is a gift from God to bind couples together. So, what do you do when things don't work as well as you had hoped? Bill and Pam have tips for that, too. The Farrells are international speakers, teaching workshops and talking to couples around the world about relationships, marriage, and parenting. Together, they have authored over 35 books, including the best-selling Men Are Like Waffles and Women Are Like Spaghetti. Their books have been translated into over 14 languages and have impacted thousands of married couples. Today's broadcast is based on their bestseller, Red Hot Monogamy. After more than 30 years of marriage, they have a lot to share on this subject. So let's listen now to the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's interview with Bill and Pam Farrell on today's edition of Family Talk.
Well, let me start with this question, Bill and Pam. You say in your book that you really ought to schedule a time for sexual expression at least once a week, that you ought to set that aside, because if not, the cares of life will run right past you. And so you talk about it openly with one another. This is not just something done in your own head in the dark of night. This is something that you bring into the relationship openly and talk through the times that you have together. And what really surprised me, I haven't heard anybody say this before, is that those times when you are together ought to be spent, or some of them, talking about the finances and the children and the things that usually are recommended to be avoided when you're about to have intimacy. How do you come up with that?
Yeah. Well, you know, Dr. Dobson, we looked at intimacy, and to have a truly red-hot romantic relationship, you have to deal with all the issues. So social intimacy, that means having new experiences together so you're not just bored with each other year after year. Mm-hmm. Financial intimacy, if you're fighting over money, there's not going to be a lot of red-hot romance going on.
And like one of the things I found is when I said, Pam, I want to be financially intimate with you. I don't just want to manage the budget. I want to be financially intimate with you. What I discovered is that Pam spends money according to her personality, and I love her personality. Oh. Now, if I just look at it as the money, part of her personality, she's pretty spontaneous. And if I were to look at, wow, she spends money spontaneously, I don't want her to do that. But when I realize, you know what, that's an expression of her personalities, I can work with this.
And what so if she has a flamboyant personality and spends money flamboyantly?
Well, I think we all know you can't just say, you know, the money well is unlimited, so just go. Yeah. But at the same time, that individual probably married her because he likes her flamboyance. And if you can bring that into the discussion, how are we going to manage this flamboyant personality you have in all the areas of life? Yeah. He probably likes it in the bedroom, probably likes it in the way she dresses, probably doesn't like it in the way she spends money.
All right, let's get more specific. You schedule Thursday night as time to be together sexually and emotionally. And at least some of the time, you suggest that you start out by talking about these tough issues and problems. You're not going to wind up driving each other away here?
We schedule Red Hot Monogamy, like let's say Thursday night's our date night. But we have a separate time Tuesday morning where we have breakfast and we handle the business side of life.
Okay, so then
and that's
back
where
to
we
back.
Do the discussion. Yeah. That's right. All one right. leads to the other. Yeah. And, you know, we want those kind of discussions in parental intimacy so that you're raising the kids on the same page, emotional intimacy. And so we have little getaways, and we describe what to do on those getaways to work out those bugs. So at the end of that getaway, now you're on the same page and you want some red hot monogamy.
Right. And the whole idea is in tying them together. If we talk on Tuesday about finances, we're going to celebrate on Thursday that we had the discussion. And people get locked up and we have to solve everything.
All right. So you're really defusing the tension that has developed over those issues.
Exactly.
Yes. Because we know some of those issues take time. Mm-hmm. And we know that some of those issues take a lot of time. Because some of those issues get ingrained in who we are. Like having grown up, again, in broken situations in the past, we have triggers in our life. Like if I ever get around a woman that doesn't make sense, I don't mean just an emotional woman, but like somebody, the thoughts aren't connecting. I flash back to those days with my mom, and I start to have this reaction inside that has very little to do now with anything Pam's doing. Well, sometimes that gets in the way.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to say, you know what, even with those issues going on, we're not going to demand that that gets completely solved before we celebrate the fact that we're working on it together.
Bill, let's suppose that the mood is right and you're not sure exactly how to tell Pam that. And Pam, let's suppose that you have a headache and you're not real sure. You think you see something coming. You're not real sure that you want it to be. How do you guys talk about, how should married couples talk about things like that?
You know, we take our clues from the Song of Solomon. And one of the things that they did is they had like a code when they wanted each other. In the Song of Songs, it talks about the garden. And that's kind of a euphemism for, baby, I want you. And so we encourage couples to create their own code so that it gets things clear when you have that desire for one another. And, you know, it can be really fun. Like this one couple, they went and they'd been some stress. And so he's like, okay, we need to have some time together. And so he took her away and they spent the whole day together. And the kids were at his sister's house, who's single. And he looks down, they ended up just going to the park, having a great conversation and feeding the ducks. And when he looked down at his watch, he's like, oh no, we're supposed to go get the kids. They went in and picked up the kids. And his sister said, oh, how'd things go? You know, because she's thinking.
Well, it was fine. We just fed the ducks.
She's like, oh, fed the ducks, huh? And he came back out and he's like, my sister thinks that we had sex and she called it feeding the ducks. And so that became like a code word for, you know, it's okay,
like
feed,
the ducks.
Yeah. And for us, ours came out of our book, Men Are Like Waffles, Women Like Spaghetti, because men and women process stress differently. Yeah. Men like to go to their favorite boxes to rest and recharge. And God kind of helped us girls out in that most of men's favorite boxes are shaped like boxes, like the TV screen shaped like a box, the computer screen shaped like a box, the garage is shaped like a box. The refrigerator is shaped like
a box.
Football field is shaped like a box. The bed is shaped like a box. In fact, that sex box is a guy's favorite box to go to when he's stressed. It's kind of like that free square in the middle of a bingo card, and a guy can get there from wherever they're square on his waffle. Well, when we were presenting that at a conference early on, every time we came to the area of sexual intimacy after that, the crowd would yell, bingo. And so now that's like our code word. Want to play some bingo? You know, and your code words might change over time, too, like, ours used to be, you want to take a nap. Well, we're over 40 now, so you want to take a nap means, do you want to take a nap? So we can't use that for a code word anywhere. And my favorite, though, has got to be this sweet, shy lady. And she couldn't even, like, come to, like, say any code word out loud. And so she just writes a number on the top of the mirror every morning between 1 and 10, how interested she is in red-hot monogamy that day. So the first place her husband goes to check is the mirror, you know, every day. And if it's 1, honey, you might as well go golfing after work. If it's 10, ooh, he runs home at lunchtime. So
in your book, you talk about pillows with a pillow that has, I think,
tonight or not tonight.
Tonight and not tonight.
Yeah.
What happens if you say tonight and your teenager comes walking in and sees the pillow?
That's too funny. Our son, when he was in college, I gave Bill some socks that were for me that said tonight or not tonight.
So if you roll them, if you roll down the top of it, it says, you know, not tonight. If you roll them up, it says tonight. So.
Oh. Right. And I think our son captured it. He's like, if you need socks to clue them in, there's something wrong in your relationship. And
well, we wanted our kids to know that this was a very healthy part of a marriage relationship. So early on when our kids were young, we set aside Thursday nights. And there was a collection of toys that our kids could only play with on Thursday night, and they had to play with them in bed. So Thursday night was their night to go to bed early, and they got their special box of toys. And they could only have those on Thursday night.
Did they ever figure it out?
Oh, yeah. Early on, they figured it out.
They were a little bit older. But the good part is they want to protect their intimate life. So they've made really wise choices in their own relationships. And our son, Brock, was dating Hannah, who he ended up, she's our new precious daughter-in-law. So the first time we were meeting the two families was at ICRS, which is the big booksellers convention. So everybody's coming into town, and Brock, we're all out to dinner. And then after dinner, Brock walks Hannah back to where she's staying with her folks, then walks back home. Well, he got caught in this torrential rain in Atlanta. And Bill and I were upstairs. We had some appointments coming up. Bill was already at his appointment, and I was getting ready for an evening appointment. And so I hung the Do Not Disturb sign on the door. And Brock trudges up the hallway. He's soaking wet, and he sees this Do Not Disturb sign. And I can hear him outside saying, "Oh, man, I can't interrupt my parents, but I'm soaking wet." And I just opened the door. I started laughing. I'm like, "It's okay. It's just me here." And I said, "But isn't it great that at 21, the first thing on your mind is that you might be interrupting your parents' red-hot monogamy?"
You know, the first part of keeping the romantic life alive is you just check in with each other. We have a tendency just to say, okay, the kid's taken care of, or the bill's done, or this, is the schedule taken care of? And we never stop to say, so how are you today? Yeah. And so the first part just starts checking in every day to stay in sync. Because if you're only in sync one night a week, that's all you've got, and it gets robbed from you, it's a big disappointment. But if it's part of the picture, the 10 or 20 minutes a day, we're checking in, and sometimes that turns spontaneous.
Right.
Because the time is right, and all of the circumstances are right, and you couldn't have ever planned it, but because we're checking in with each other, the opportunity arose.
And we've actually seen that we need to plan twice as much time as we think. So we put two date nights in because we are busy in ministry, and you know somebody's crisis might definitely interrupt. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of safeguards us by having extra time.
If there is one word that I hear coming through what you all are saying, it's preparation.
Yes.
You don't just climb into bed at the end of the day and all of a sudden the subject introduces itself and you haven't talked. You haven't been together. You haven't connected emotionally. Mm-hmm. And a man can function very well in that mode.
See,
a woman usually can't.
Way. Yeah. When we're dating, we're constantly trying to love the person we're dating. And then we get married and we think it's okay to just do it
an hour here, hour there.
So one of the secrets is, especially as a man, to try to constantly love his wife. So stay in contact through phone calls and send emails and get in routines of getting flowers if she likes flowers or finding things to say to her that you just say over and over and over again so she never forgets.
You mentioned in the first program that you have a lot of ideas for how to put romance in your life in red-hot monogamy. And I'm sort of reluctant to read them because they're pretty intimate.
I have some of the G-rated ones over here.
Yeah, some of these suggestions are not X-rated or R-rated. They're just good common sense. But number 71, leave love notes between the pages of a book or magazine that your mate is reading. Mm-hmm. Just a way of saying that I love you.
Yes.
And that is in itself a tool for building intimacy.
Right, yes. Red-hot romance.
Especially for a woman.
It doesn't happen overnight. You know, that's one of the things that from Song of Solomon, and we took a clue there, is that he built anticipation. He made romance like a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wouldn't you like to suggest that couples read the Song of Solomon together?
Actually, that's one of the ideas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course, Solomon had 1,000 concubines and wives.
Yeah, he blew
he
it
ought
after
to
the
know
first
something
one.
About
yeah.
it. I don't really understand the man at that stage.
No.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, he made some poor choices after wife one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Song of Solomon is written during those innocent years when they were devoted to one another and when they really were trying to figure out, how do we make a marriage that works well?
Is there anything off limits? Is there anything you do not say to your spouse? Is there anything that is a real turnoff?
Right.
And if so, what is it?
That's probably one of the most asked questions, Dr. Dobson, is what is okay behind that bedroom door? And is probably the number one question we are ever asked. Yeah. And when I encourage women to and men to read Red Hot Monogamy, I'm like, you know, read it with a highlighter in one hand and a Sharpie in the other. And the things that you really like, underline, and the things you're like, not in my lifetime, Sharpie them out. I mean, that's part of the conversation that you need to have is what is okay between us? And Bill has some biblical things.
Intimate relationships are very intense. And whereas self-disclosure is very important and sharing all the details of our lives with each other is very important, what really makes intimacy work is that intensity gets matched with compassion. And what often happens in marital relationships is we get critical of each other and we get demanding of each other. And when you do that, it cuts off the intimacy. So it's important that we share with each other, but timing is everything.
Yeah.
You know, not all the struggles that I was working through, we were ready to talk about in the first year of our marriage. And as we've matured together, we've been able to have more mature conversations about how growing up in the home I grew up affected me and how Pam's background affects her. But we couldn't uncover all that in the first year. As we were just exploring.
It's silly to say that you should live together before you're married.
Right. Oh, it's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, it's the worst thing you can do. And you know the second worst thing? In fact, when I asked the question a minute ago about the things that should not occur in a sexual relationship is pornography.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's
it's like a drug. Pornography is like a drug. Mm-hmm. It'll give you a high. Mm-hmm. It really will. And for a time, it'll give you a ride. Mm-hmm. And like drugs, it will burn out the relationship.
Yes.
It is not a good idea. No. And especially because men and women see pornography differently. Mm-hmm. And a man being more physically oriented can begin to make demands of his wife that she's not prepared to deliver on. And it just creates chaos. I'm telling you, folks, I know something about this.
Yes, you do.
I have studied it for many years, served on a commission on pornography, and I'm telling you, don't go there. It's very possible for the man especially to get flat out hooked on it, and then he doesn't need his wife anymore because he's off doing his own thing. Mm-hmm. So you address this in the book, and I certainly agree with you.
We do. We totally agree with all your research, and that's like the worst thing. It pulls the plug on your whole intimate life. And so that's why the question is really has to be answered is, well, what does God think is okay? You know, because couples want to know, well, will that spice up our love life? No, it won't. So what does God say is okay then?
And it's amazing to me. I've been working as a pastor my whole adult life. And one thing that amazes me is how little God says about sex when you consider how much of a problem it's been for the human race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You would think that God would have long discussions about it. But it seems pretty clear that it comes down to every intimate act between a married couple should be an act of love. That it's something we do for the other person, not taken on selfishly. Second, everything that's done between a husband and wife ought to be agreed upon. Because that's what brings honor and respect into the bedroom is you know, we're free to discuss whatever we want, but there needs to be agreement before we actually try it. And then the third one, which we didn't share early on in our ministry, but now we share it all the time, is it needs to just be the two of you. There need to not be other people there, and there needs to not be pornography there, because those ruin the secret. And the power in it is the secret. And it amazes me, people will have the courage to bring all that into their bedroom. They'll bring pornography in, but they don't have the courage to talk about their intimate life. Mm-hmm. And it's really a false step of courage to even venture out into that.
The real power is in the discussion. What we are hearing for many years, and it is so sad, is a situation where the man was more or less addicted to pornography when they got married. It came out of adolescence and early masturbatory activity that just continues into marriage. And the wife is not, and she is offended and turned off by this.
Yes.
And this is the centerpiece of his sexual experience. And it just drives a tremendous wedge between the two of them. And it is sad because it is destroying marriages. You know this.
It's the male killer. And I believe, having worked as a pastor, that one of the reasons why it's hard to get people to serve is they're afraid they're going to get exposed.
That the closet, skeletons in the closet and the door might get opened.
You cannot break that habit alone. You're going to have help. And the way to get help is accountability. You can't go tell everybody this. You don't get up in the pulpit and tell everybody you're addicted to pornography, because that's all they'll think about when they see you or your kids. You can't do that. You select godly men and have them hold you accountable. When you come back from a trip, they ask you, when you're in the hotel room, what did you watch? And were there any moments that you're ashamed of in your relationship with another woman? It's hard, even in those circumstances. And when it's at its worst, there needs to be intensive counseling, because this is a tough one. This is like a drug addiction. It's a tough one.
And I would add to it, you know, a lot of men want to go tell their wives and keep it there. You know, I'm going to tell you because I trust you, but we're not going to tell anybody this. And if a wife hears that, she really should say, well, do you want to call for help or do you want me to? Because we're not going to leave it at this. Because, again, it just is insidious. It's like you said, it's an addiction.
If she doesn't say anything, she becomes an enabler.
Yes. And also, it's real easy for women to turn it on themselves. Oh, I wasn't thin enough. I wasn't sexy enough, whatever. And at that point, she needs to say, no, that's a lie from the enemy. I'm not going to believe that. In fact, even if he says that to me, I'm not going to believe that. I'm going to proclaim the truth of who I am right now. And I'm going to proclaim the truth of what Jesus wants for our marriage. And so, if I find my husband, you know, connected to pornography, you know, walk in, the internet's on, the best thing to say is, honey, I love us too much for this to come between us. Are you going to call for help or am I? And you hold out the phone and then you say, you know what? I'm not going to let Satan rob from us. I'm not going to turn this on me, because when pornography entered our home, that was one loss. And if I turn this on me and become like all introspective and think I'm not good enough, that's two losses. And that will make me feel distant from my husband. Then that'll be three losses. And if that distance continues, we might end up divorced. That's four losses. And if we end up divorced, then our kids will pay. That's five losses. And
Pam, when you do that, expect anger, because you'll probably get it. And that's a point at which love must be tough.
Exactly.
Do
I know
what?
A great book by that
time. Hey, I've heard that.
And can I make a plug to the godly men that are out there? Because what often happens is we have a lot of godly men sitting in our churches that don't feel like they have anything to say to a younger generation. And I just want to tell those men, engage with the younger men, because where Pam and I got our start is I used to go to church when we were first married, and I didn't know what to do. So I would look for couples that had been married at least 20 years that looked like they were happy. I'd sit behind them in church, so they had to greet me, and I'd find a way to get invited to lunch so I could ask them how they did it. And I just want to say, you know, the godly men that are out there, take an interest in younger men so that when this surfaces, they have somebody to tell.
The safety net's underneath that young couple.
I think we just have time for me to ask you one last question.
Sure.
It comes out of the book, and it has to do with advice that you give to women that needs to be explained, and it has to do with being a risk taker.
Yes, right. Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
You know, we've talked about what the counterfeit is, what Satan tries to rob from us, and we in the book talk about what are the traits of a red hot lover: other-centered, a risk taker, God-focused, attentive, self-aware, mature. Those are the traits of a red hot lover. And so if a woman truly loves as Christ loves, she'll take her eyes off of herself and she'll put her eyes on her husband, and she'll say, what can I do? What can I say that will encourage you, honey? And she'll be willing to risk a little bit, maybe outside of her comfort zone a little bit. And she'll listen to her spouse and be willing to try some unique things. And again, we've talked about it has to be agreed upon. So if you're not comfortable yet, okay, say, okay, give me a couple
unique
of other
things.
Ideas.
You're talking about sexual experimentation,
right.
Which as long as it's within the marital relationship.
Exactly. It could be as simple as turn the lights on.
Mutually exciting, agreed upon.
Right.
Then it's a good thing.
It is. Anytime a woman takes her eyes off of herself and focuses on her spouse, anytime a husband takes his eyes off of himself and focuses on his wife, that will produce red hot monogamy.
What a note to end on here. Hey, thank you all. This has been very, very interesting.
Thank
I have
you.
Loved having you here. We'll do it again. The name of the book is Red Hot Monogamy, Making Your Marriage Sizzle. And there is some sizzle in this book. We didn't talk about all of it, but some of it's there. Bill and Pam Farrell are holding seminars on this subject and are being used by the Lord to strengthen marriage and strengthen the physical relationship of marriage. Thank you for this two-day discussion. It's been very enlightening, and we'll do it again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the conclusion of a classic broadcast here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. This is always one of our most popular broadcasts, and even if you only caught a portion of it, I'm sure you can see why. Bill and Pam Farrell have so much wise advice for making your marriage stronger, and we've only been able to scratch the surface in these two programs. I urge you to go to our website and download this program to hear again. And on the broadcast page, you'll find the link to Bill and Pam's website, love-wise.com. There, you can buy the book, Red Hot Monogamy, and also find out if the Farrells are speaking anywhere near you. Whether your marriage is brand new or decades old, whether your intimacy level is high or low, you can learn something from the many suggestions and homework assignments in this book that will deepen your relationship with your spouse. It may be the best investment you ever make in your marriage. Our web address is drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825, and we'll help you find the resources you need. God bless, and thank you for joining us today. Be sure to tune in again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.